It's time for a full hour dedicated to the sport where the true legends are known by one word names. Tiger, Jack, Arnie, Lefty. Just the mention of their names paints a picture of great moments in time. The next age of stars are being made every weekend as stellar competition comes down to a 10-foot curling putt with a title on the line. Now, here's Jimmy Hyams with this week's edition of Golf Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Welcome to Golf Talk. I'm Jimmy Hyams along with Braxton Hunter. Braxton, my co-host, he's an instructor at Fairways and Greens, a former All-Ohio Valley Conference player at Tennessee Tech. Braxton, how are you?
I'm good, Jimmy. I'm just excited for you this evening that you can talk about something positive since you've probably spent the last 4 hours on whether they're going to have or not have football.
Well, they had golf yesterday. They had golf over the weekend. They had golf in prime time, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And by the way, we'll get to some prime time playing by you from earlier in the day. We will tell you that Golf Talk is brought to you by Homarkey Wellness CBD. Feel better physically and mentally with universal benefits of CBD. We are going to be joined by Bo Andrews. He's a University of Tennessee assistant golf coach who had an outstanding showing in the Tennessee State Amateur. And then later in the show at 7:40, Brant Packer with Golf Channel is going to join us. He's a Tennessee graduate. He produces many of the golf events that you see on TV. And so we're going to visit with Brant a little bit later. Great guy, so we look forward to his insights. All right, we are going to jump into our pro news and notes. And our pro news and notes are brought to you by Holston Hills Country Club. Holston Hills offers memberships tailored to families, avid golfers, and corporate executives, providing the best private club value for its members from the mountains to the coast. Learn more at HolstonHills.com. How about that performance by Colin Morikawa? 23 years old, he wins the PGA. He chips in for birdie on 14 after a poor wedge shot. He drives it to 7 feet for an eagle on number six. Was that 16? It was 16. To take it to 13 under par, and he ends up winning the PGA Championship. It's only the second major in which he's participated, and he held off Paul Casey, who I thought was fantastic. Casey played a great round, shot a 66. He didn't miss many shots. Dustin Johnson shot 68. He missed a lot of shots, but I thought Morikawa was outstanding. The young golfer who was a tremendous player at California with a great win. I don't know if he'll hit a whole lot better shots than that drive he hit on 16. But, Braxton, what a great performance by Morikawa.
Yeah, and, I mean, we talked about him just a few weeks back after he won the Workday at Muirfield Village and, you know, kind of about his staying power in the game and just the poise he showed coming down the stretch. That's the one word I kind of go back to is just how poised he stayed. He said in the post round interview, he channeled some of that, one of those shots he hit on, I believe it was number 14 or 15 at Muirfield Village, that they had moved the tee up and it was drivable, and he had a really good tee shot in the round where he won, and he channeled that, he said, there on 16 at Harding Park, and man, it was just really, really good to watch, and he was so solid coming down the stretch, and just like I said, just the poise, just really good for his age.
He made a 20-foot par putt on his first hole, and when I saw that, I thought, look out, because when he was able to do that.
Yeah, and he kind of hit a little poor wedge shot there, and on that one, he made that long putt, and then he hit the poor wedge shot on 14 and chipped it in, so it was kind of one of those days where even when he hit a bad shot, it really went well and went his way.
He led the field in proximity to the hole. He led the field in strokes gained putting. He led the field in fairways hit. Braxton, I think you can win a lot of tournaments if you do that.
Yeah, I mean, and you see that, and it's like, how did he not win by more? I mean, he was good in kind of all the categories that matter. I mean, getting the ball in the fairway, hitting it close to the hole, and making putts. So it's kind of surprising after seeing that he didn't win by more than two shots.
He's the first golfer ever to break 130 in a major on the weekend. He shot 129. He shot 65, then 64. In the final round, 64, he shot 31 on the back. And so that was his 29th start on the Pro Tour? Well, Tiger Woods' 29th start on the Pro Tour was a win in the Masters by 12 shots in 1997. I thought that was an interesting coincidence. To win the PGA at age 23, he joins Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus, Rory McIlroy. I also thought it was interesting that 13 of the last 18 majors have been won by a first-time winner. So he joins the group. The only stumble he had was when he picked up the trophy and the lid fell off.
Yeah, they said that was the only bogey he seemed to make. And, you know, the 13 out of the last 18 majors won by a first-time winner just speaks to the depth of talent that's on the PGA Tour at this time. And just a lot of those guys are ready to win. I mean, you could look at Matt Wolff's finish yesterday, just lights out down the stretch. So there's no fear in those guys at all. They're just full go, ready to win.
Brooks Koepka was going for a three-peat. Now, he had a shot at a three-peat in the U.S. Open last year at Pebble Beach. He finished second to Gary Woodland. This time he was in position, played one of the worst rounds I've seen him play in a major. He shot a 74. He was 4 for par on the front side. And this came after Saturday night when he said, "I like my chances. When I've been in this position before, I've capitalized." And he, meaning Dustin Johnson, "He's only won one. I'm playing good. I don't know. We'll see." Rory McIlroy wasn't very fond of that. He said he was taken aback by Koepka's comments. What was your reaction to what Koepka said about Dustin Johnson?
I think it just kind of goes along with how Koepka is in the interview process. I don't think he really cares what other people think, and he just kind of lays it out there. And I mean, obviously, Dustin Johnson's won 21 times on the PGA Tour and won major championships, so he's had a fairly good career. I mean, it's not like he's, you know, choked away millions of tournaments. And, I mean, Koepka's, it's the first time it's kind of backfired on him, I'd say that. Yeah. I mean, that was the biggest shock. I think that he would have been in the mix in any scenario that I would have pictured, like, going into Sunday. So that just kind of shocked me more than anything.
Koepka had a streak of six consecutive top fours in the majors, and that tied Jack Nicklaus's record. So let's talk about Dustin Johnson. So he had the 54-hole lead. That's the fourth time he's had the 54-hole lead or co-lead in a major. He hasn't won any. Now, of those that have not won with a 54-hole lead or co-lead, that's the worst record, 0-4. I didn't think he was particularly sharp, but do you think that, and Johnson's won a lot, you mentioned 21 wins, do you think he gets a little tight when he's got that lead going into the final round of a major?
I mean, you'd have to say yes, somewhat. I mean, he hit some kind of poor shots there at bad times. I mean, he still shot 2 under for the day on Sunday, still a good round, but you know, when he had the opportunity there on 10 with a mid-iron in his hand, pulled it left of the green and almost an impossible place to get it up and down. You know, that's just mistakes that major champions do not make. And if they do, something lucky happens where they hole it or something. You know, we've seen that in the past. But his timely mistakes were kind of what did him in yesterday. And I mean, he keeps giving himself opportunities. He's going to win another one before too long. It's just kind of where he is in the game. You just expect a little bit more from him in the major championships.
I thought that 7-iron he pulled into the sand was a killer for him. He needed to get the birdie. And then he wasn't as sharp with his irons. He would hit it on the green, but he might have had a 30- or 40-foot putt. So he wasn't giving himself that many opportunities along the way. And then on 16, the hole that Marikawa eagles, he hits it in the penalty area and then chips it in from an ungodly situation for a birdie. But he ended up with a 68, which isn't bad. I thought Paul Casey was tremendous. I thought he drove it well. His irons were good. He putted well. He did everything he could. Now he has to carry that banner. He is the most major starts without a win. Casey's at 64. Lee Westwood and Ian Poulter at 61. Luke Donald at 53. All of them are European players. What do you make of that, Braxton?
It's just funny. I mean, it's like you think about if you go back a little bit in time, Colin Montgomery, I mean, he was kind of the same way. He had a ton of major starts and dominated the European Tour for many years and never got over the hump, so to speak, and winning that major. And same thing with Paul Casey, Westwood, and Poulter, and Luke Donald. I mean, they're all great players that have had numerous chances to win. And I think, you know, Casey's in the best form of that group as far as being able to contend on the last two majors of the year. But, you know, the odds are at his age 43, there's not going to be that many more opportunities with just how young the game's gotten. And just, you know, if you look through the history of who has won at that level at that age, there's not many to speak of.
I know it was only a two-shot difference, his 66 and DJ's 68, but I thought Casey played much better, much more solid round. And I thought he did a lot of things to deserve to win. It's just that he got outplayed by a spectacular performance. All right,
yep,
Bryson DeChambeau, we can't go without talking about him. So he breaks his driver on Thursday. It's on like number 7. He hits a drive. He leans over to pick up his tee, and the shaft breaks. He is allowed to replace it. Is that a new rule?
No, as long as it wasn't done in anger.
Okay.
That's been the case for a while, but it was it was probably done in anger of a lot of drives hit, a lot of really hard drives hit with that drive, or that driver, so not surprised that driver shaft would snap at some point with the torque he's been put on that shaft.
A lot was made about he actually drove it an average of 20 yards longer with the new shaft. He went from like 320 to 339. That's true, but I also wondered if maybe – I know a couple of those long drives were a little bit wind-aided. I'm not sure if that's a completely accurate stat with his longer drives. And also you could face a dog leg or something that might take it – well, he's going to go for it anyway, but if he hits it in the rough, you know, it might take some yardage off of it. Did you put any credence into the fact that he actually drove it about 20 yards further with a new shaft?
No, because like you said, it could have been, I mean, it happened on the 7th hole, the first round. So it could have, he could have had just a few end of the wind tee shots, or like you said, with the dog legs. And I don't think he's going to average hitting it 20 yards further with a shaft that's exactly the same. So
yeah.
That 340 numbers, if to put it in perspective, they're at sea level with 60 degree temperatures. That's basically like driving it here in Knoxville, Tennessee at about 370 yards. So that is very, very far.
Yes, it is. Tiger Woods, he had a very solid final round, 67. He had a 68 in the first round, which was the lowest first round he's had in the majors going back to 2012. He made 115 feet of putts on Thursday, 49 feet on Friday. Didn't putt much better on Saturday, but he did make birdies on two of the final three Saturday. And so he ends up with started with a 68, ended with a 67. Your assessment of Tiger Woods' performance?
So I would go and say the one thing that I was concerned about going into the tournament would have been his physical health, and he was 10th in driving distance for the week, so his physical health was great. His short game, his putting mainly just kind of let him down. He was one of the last in the strokes gained putting stat for the week after having a really pretty good solid putting round in the first round, just
right.
Made absolutely nothing in rounds two or three until the very end of round three when he was already – I think at the time where he finally started making some putts, he was already like four over for the day. So
yeah.
I think just the fact that he's kind of tinkering around a little bit with the putter just tells you that he's not really happy with the way the putts are coming off the blade. So
yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't go back to his old faithful at some point, but he was just kind of trying to get a little bit different feel with a little bit longer putter with some weights and stuff to kind of just change how it comes off the face just a little bit.
All right, and that'll do it for the PGA Championship coverage. As far as the LPGA marathon, Danielle King wins it again. There was a woman that withdrew because her caddy tested positive. No event on the Champions Tour. There's a major coming up. In fact, that major is going to be the Senior Players Championship at Firestone Country Club in Akron, Ohio. The LPGA, the Scottish Open. Korn Ferry is going to be in Boise, Idaho, after they just played in Portland. And then the Wyndham is going to be where the PGA tournament is being played this week. So that's the upcoming schedule for pro golf. When we come back, we're going to visit with Bo Andrews. He is an assistant coach at the University of Tennessee, and talk about his play in the Tennessee State Amateur, as well as five players, which we believe is a record, playing in the U.S. Amateur out in Bandon Dunes in Oregon. With Braxton Hunter, I'm Jimmy Himes. This is Golf Talk brought to you by Hallmarkey Wellness CBD.
Back to Jimmy Himes with more Golf Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Welcome back to Golf Talk. Golf Talk brought to you by Hallmarkey Wellness CBD. Feel better physically and mentally with universal benefits of CBD. I'm Jimmy Himes, along with my co-host Braxton Hunter. Pleased now to be joined by University of Tennessee men's golf assistant Bo Andrews. And his appearance is brought to you by Three Ridges Golf Course, named one of Golf Digest's best places to play. For more info or to book a tee time, go to knoxcounty.org/golf/Three Ridges. Bo, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. Hey, congratulations. Outstanding play in the Tennessee State Amateur. Just tell us, what did you feel like was working for you?
Oh, man, I appreciate it. Yeah, it was great to get back out there and compete a little bit and just getting back out there and hitting some fairways, hitting some greens, making a couple putts was nice, and just, you know, really just having a decent strategy out there kind of helped me to a decent finish there.
You were very consistent with your scores, 69, 70, 70, and 70 for 9 under par. Did you feel like you played as consistent as your scores indicated?
I think so. I felt like I hit a good amount of fairways and greens and pretty much played the course about the same each day. And so for me, that was pretty good, and got to, you know, feel the nerves and whatnot. So it was pretty consistent each day in that regard.
Hey, Bo, Braxton Hunter, just talk a little bit about your strategy. You kind of mentioned your strategy to help you get to that point. Just kind of give us a little bit of detail on what that was exactly.
Yeah, Hillwood Country Club's a great course, and the greens got pretty fast, and so you kind of had to know where you were going into the greens and the par fives, and so I just tried to give myself a good opportunity, you know, for birdie as much as possible, and leave it kind of more on the low side or below the hole. That way I wasn't feeling like I was running putts by when I was above them.
Talk about your kind of journey here to Tennessee. What kind of led up to you joining the staff here at the university, and kind of give us a little bit of your background on your career?
Yeah. So, fortunately for me, I knew Coach Webb. He was my assistant when I played at Georgia Tech in 2013 and 14. And he was a great assistant there, and we remained friends for the years following. And when he took the job at Middle Tennessee, I was playing mini tours and whatever pro tournament I could sign up for. And I did all the, back then, the Webb Monday qualifiers, so now the Korn Ferry Monday qualifiers. And I was going up to Nashville for that Monday qualifier, and ended up making it and staying at his house that week in Nashville, and missed the cut for the fifth straight Korn Ferry event. And we had kind of been talking, and I told him that if any opportunity ever arose, just to give me a call. And sure enough, a couple weeks later, he got the call about becoming the head coach at Tennessee, and I joined as fast as I could.
Our guest, Bo Andrews, Vols assistant coach. Bo, we bragged about you tying for third in the state AM. I do wonder, you beat a lot of your players. Is that a good thing?
I mean, any time I can play in a tournament or a competitive environment with them, I think it's good. It gives me an opportunity to kind of remember how hard the game is, and to potentially talk about some things with them that I may be experiencing out there, or they may be experiencing. So I think it's a good thing that we ended up playing in the same tournament. I know Tyler and
and Jake Hall would like to have had a few more shots, so they wouldn't have lost to me. But at the end of the day, I definitely think it's a win.
Well, they have to listen to you now, don't they, if you beat them?
Oh, yeah.
Not that they weren't anyway, but.
Exactly. No, they're forced to kind of listen to what I have to say now after that.
So do you plan to play in some future events?
I love to play as much as I possibly can, but also I love coaching even more. So kind of however that goes, then I'll add a few events in the summer. But other than that, that's probably about it.
Hey, Bo, talk a little bit about the five Vols that are playing in the USAM with Hunter and with Braden getting off to a really good start today in the first round of stroke play. Just talk a little bit about that, how they managed to get the invitation to play. And Jimmy had noted it's the first that it looks like it's the most players Tennessee's ever had in the USAM at one time. So talk about that.
We were thrilled to get five players in the USAM. It's such a prestigious event, and to have Hunter and Braden shoot two great scores to open up really kind of set themselves up for another good day tomorrow. Bryce finished strong and Spence finished with a birdie too, and Reese is out on the course now, so they're all hopeful to climb up that leaderboard tomorrow and work their way into match play. But it seems the USGA and went off the Wagger rankings based on having to cancel qualifying. And so our guys had been preparing and playing well in tournaments in the past year. So they were able to get into the tournament and compete at probably the biggest national amateur stage you can.
Did you have any plans of going out there to watch or have Coach Webb out there at all with them, or how was that? Was that not allowed with the COVID? Like, just kind of talk about that just a minute.
Yeah, I think they've all been working really hard on their games, and they'd all decided to go out there on their own and just and try to shoot the best score they could. And we've been able to help them a little bit at home, but out there now, by themselves on the West Coast, they're just hoping to kind of get it done and start learning to do it by themselves and whatnot. So it's nice to see a couple good scores up there on the board.
So, Bo, I saw a 65 for Hunter Walcott, or actually a 5-under. I'm not sure if it was 65. He was 5-under. Braden Garrison, 3-under. And I saw where Spencer Cross was +4 at the end of his round. Do you have updates on Bryce Lewis?
I had Bryce finished at 2-over.
2-over, okay. What will it take to advance to match play?
So they'll take the top 64, and I think the last time I looked at maybe a projected cut line or just kind of looked at imaginary one, probably my guess would be somewhere around even par. That may fluctuate depending on how windy it gets out there this afternoon and tomorrow.
Tell me how valuable you think this experience is for these guys to be competing in the U.S. Amateur.
It's just such a great experience. I mean, especially just to represent the school as well. I mean, they get to not only play on a top-tier course on the West Coast in different conditions and on different type of grass, but also to play in the best competition in the world. And you kind of get a chance to see how your game stacks up. And for these guys, it's just another step in the progression for, winning individual and team titles and going out onto the PGA Tour.
So going back to your game for just a moment, talk about number one, why didn't your world golf amateur ranking get you into the tournament with your good play lately? And then also when you get a good taste of kind of competing again, does it kind of fire that fuel up a little bit to think about kind of testing the waters again, playing wise, or are you kind of loving the coaching aspect?
Right. No, I love the coaching aspect. I mean, playing is so fun, but to tell you the truth, I'd rather play in a tournament or play with the guys on the team and then be able to talk about it and coach them up and see what we can do better. So for me, the coaching is the best part. And so I probably don't see myself really getting too much back into playing, but I love playing just to kind of continue to help myself learn and learn how to be a better coach in order to help these guys achieve their dreams.
Hey, Bo, we appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on your top three finish in the state amateur, and hopefully we'll get a chance to visit with you again soon.
Yeah, thank you so much, and good playing today, Braxton.
Thanks, Bo. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you all.
And we'll get to Braxton's play here in a little bit, but Bo Andrews, his interview brought to you by Three Ridges. We'll also get to our local news and notes, and that is brought to you by Golf Tech. Golf Tech has its a lot of sales going on at their largest discounts of the year. They got savings of up to 20%. You can give them a call at 566-0505, 566-0505. With the state am, it was Jack Crosby who ended up winning it. He's from Memphis. He was 14 under par. William Nottingham from the Tri-Cities was at 11 under. He plays at Clemson. And then you had Bo Andrews in a four-way tie at third place. Kyle Cottom of Fox Den was 8 under par. He tied for 7th with Tyler Johnson, also of Fox Den, and Tyler, a Tennessee player. Davis Shore, you might remember him. He was a great amateur player out of Knoxville, plays at Alabama. He was 7 under par. He had an opening 67. Jack Smith of the Honors also tied for 14th at 6. Philip Lee, who's one of our sponsors on Golf Talk, was at 6 under par, plays out of Greystone in Nashville. Ryan Greer, Cherokee Country Club, 4 under par, tied for 18th with Connor McKay of Fox Den. And then Lamp Simpson of Farragut and Fox Den, a Tennessee commit, 3 under par. Tanner Davis of Houston Hills, 3 under par. Jake Hall tied for 24th at 1 under. Will Collins of Beaverbrook at 1 under. So that's a look at some of the scores from the Tennessee State Am. As far as the Corn Ferry played in Portland, David Skins and Rick Lamb tied for 22nd. Lamb actually shot a second round 63 after a 73, but he was kind of up and down. He goes 73, 63, 75, 69. Skins was much more consistent. Both of them ended up at 4 under par. The Pro-Am held at Sevierville Golf Course. Allie Knight and Joe Castle each shoot 69. The first place team included Knight, Tom Bryan, who shot 68, Terry Carpenter 73, Jim Minot with a 90. Now, they played at Centennial. They had some that play on Sunday because you can at times get a Sunday tee time, and they played Monday morning, but they had to cancel the afternoon play at Centennial. Next up in the Pro-Am will be at Aguani. As far as the U.S. Amateur, which was held in Maryland, and that's where Sophia Schubert was an on-course analyst, Michaela Williams and Nicole Whiston from the University of Tennessee, Lady Vols, they competed and both advanced. Williams lost in the first match. Whiston won her first match, lost in the second round. And then the Tennessee PGA held at the Vanderbilt Legends Club. Our Braxton Hunter and Walt Chapman each shot 67. Braxton, congratulations. That's great playing.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was fun today. So keep it going for the next 2 days. That's the plan.
So it's a 54-hole event.
That is correct. Yeah,
okay.
54. We're done Wednesday.
Okay. And you had an eagle on number 6. Is that what I saw?
Yeah, I had a little chip in on the par 5 sixth hole, and it kind of – I thought it had spurred my round to a really positive start, and then I had a little bit of a hiccup on the eighth and then played really solid from 9 all the way around to the end. Just had a really nice clean back 9 and really looking forward to getting back out there tomorrow and just competing. You know, kind of like Bo was talking about, it's just so fun to compete and learn.
Yeah.
And to win, too, that would be the plan. So
well, there you go.
I'm all in favor of that.
Locals Jake Reeves shot 69. He's tied for 4th at 2 under. And Andrew Bateman shot a 70. He's 1 under. The top 4 qualified directly to the 2021 National Club Championship in Port St. Lucie in April in Florida, and then there are 4 alternates along the way. And Braxton, if I understand it right, the top 20 at Nationals qualify for the 2021 PGA Championship at the Ocean Course in Kiawah Island, correct?
That is correct. So that would be the professional national championships in April, and then that PGA is scheduled for May. So hopefully everything goes on as planned, and I'll have a opportunity to qualify for the PGA Championship in April. That would be the ultimate goal.
Have you played in the National Club Championship before?
I have not. This is my third opportunity as a PGA Class A member. The last 2 years I was an alternate. So the first year that I played, I was the first alternate, did not get in. And then this past year I was our second alternate, and the tournament ended up getting canceled because of the virus. So they ended up taking the top 20 off of their national points list that they accumulate from some of the national events. So okay. Didn't end up getting the opportunity this year, but hopefully, the plan is to get an opportunity to do it next year.
All right. Good luck. U.S. Women's Amateur, we mentioned Sophia Schubert was an on-course reporter. Rose Zhang, 17 years old, defeated the defending champion, Gabriel Ruffles, in 38 holes. What was interesting is that Ruffles had a three-footer that lipped out. So get a load of this. On the 36th hole, Ruffles has a four-foot putt to force the playoff. Zhang gives it to her. Then, on the second playoff hole, Ruffles gives Zhang about a four-footer, and Ruffles is inside of that, and then Zhang doesn't give her the three-footer, and Ruffles misses the putt. I thought that was I read that online, and that's what it said, and I thought, well, that's pretty interesting. Ruffles was trying to become the 12th to win it back-to-back and the 5th. Ever to win it back to the 12th to win it back to back, the 5th since World War II. So it's rare that occurs. But I thought that was an interesting way to lose it. When you give somebody a putt outside of your putt, they don't give you yours and you miss it. So yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, very interesting to say the least.
Yeah. So, hey, when we come back, we'll be joined by Brant Packer with the Golf Channel. Look forward to catching up with him. We are brought to you by Homarchy Wellness CBD. Feel better physically and mentally with the universal benefits of CBD. With Braxton Hunter, I'm Jimmy Himes. You're listening to Golf Talk.
Now back to this week's edition of Golf Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Welcome back to Golf Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes, along with my co-host Braxton Hunter. And we are so pleased now to be joined by Brant Packer, producer with the Golf Channel, does a terrific job with them, and he's been working with them for, gosh, I guess close to 13 years. Brant, how are you?
Jimmy, good to hear from you. How's everything?
It's going fantastic. I know you've had a busy season following golf all over the country, haven't you?
I have. Oh, you know, but I got to say, nothing's been more nerve-wracking than following Bo Andrews from an interview. I mean, I don't think that's fair to anybody. That's like trying to follow Rickles when on Carson. That can't be done.
Hey, so tell me how you know Bo Andrews.
So it's funny. Brennan Webb is one of my good buddies, and I knew Brennan when he was the assistant at Georgia Tech, and that was the second NCAAs that we covered at Golf Channel that was held at Concession. And Georgia Tech, ironically, was in the battle on Monday to try to get that 8th spot, and they and Georgia Tech were coming down the stretch, and they did not finish too well. And their head coach, Bruce Hepler, who's a buddy as well, on the elevator blamed me for the tee times, the way that they were set up. And I kind of countered that he had two senior All-Americans that happened to throw up all over themselves the last three holes. He didn't want to hear that. And so we kind of went after each other a little bit, and we joke about it now. And Brennan was the assistant and the third person on that elevator to this day, who said it was one of the most awkward moments of his life. And in our first NCAAs, which was at Prairie Dunes that we covered, Bo was on that team with Richie Rowinski, who ironically won a couple weeks ago, and others. And so when Brennan got hired, I was part of the search committee with Coach Fulmer, which was just an honor to try to give back to my alma mater that I love so much. And Brennan was the guy that we had targeted from day one, and it's been a home run hire. And when he hired Bo, we were laughing. It was kind of like the circle of life. So they've become two of my really good friends, and I text and talk to all the time. So it's just, you know, the Vols are in really good shape on the women's program and certainly the men's program.
You mentioned Richie Wierenski. Didn't you tell me that Bo was the best man in Richie's wedding?
Yes, yeah, so, well, it's coming up in December. So,
it's coming up,
Richie,
okay.
Yeah, so Richie was in contention on Sunday. I did the tournament up in Truckee, kind of outside of Tahoe. And Richie was in like the third to last group, possibly. And we had Troy Merritt, who was in the lead, mic'd up. So I always go to the range anyhow. So we had asked Chesson Hadley, who played at Georgia Tech, who was one of a teammates of Bo's, to be mic'd up, and Chesson didn't want to do it. He wanted to focus on the FedEx Cup. So I go on the range Sunday, and I'm giving Chesson a hard time because the leader of the tournament's going to wear a mic, but he wouldn't. So he's like, let me have it. So I let him have it. Then I went up to Richie, and just we talked about Brendan and Bo playing in the four ball, and we were making fun of those two. So I'm texting those guys on the range, and Bo kind of had a couple comments to Richie, and I can't repeat what Richie said, but once he said some four-letter words to Bo, Bo gave me the word that Richie was going deep and he was going to win the tournament. So ironically, I'm texting them in commercial coming up 18 to get info on the wedding, which I passed along to Whit Watson, and he was able to tell the story as Richie was coming up 18 and mentioning that Bo was going to be the best man in December. And so it actually worked out pretty well.
How often do you mic up a guy that's a leader in a PGA event?
You know, we've been trying to be aggressive with it. The tour allowed us to do on-course interviews. We did it in Kapalua in Maui 2 years ago. And some of the players wanted to do it, some didn't. And then, as you guys know, with everything that's been going on with this pandemic, we've had to do things differently. And with the match, you know, the match was fun to watch, but it was also kind of like the Pro Bowl. You know, there, it's not like you watch the Pro Bowl and say, hey, we should do this during the Super Bowl. And when those guys were all mic'd up and had all the access, they also had stage managers out there holding them and cueing them when to play, and we don't have that luxury. So we have tried to get guys to be mic'd, and, you know, you're at the mercy whether they'll say yes or no. And I'll give Troy a ton of credit. He agreed to wear it on Friday and played great. And then we interviewed him Saturday, and it looked like he was going to have the lead. And Gary Christian, who's one of our on-course walkers, were in commercial. And I asked Gary, I said, hey, just ask Troy, would he have any interest in wearing this tomorrow? Just assuming he would say no. And Troy goes, absolutely. So it's the first time it's ever been done on the PGA Tour. And I got to admit, I was rooting like hell for the guy because I didn't want the guy, you know, he was a stable for it, but I didn't want him to go shoot 75 being, you know, wearing a mic and going, oh, no. And he birdied the first two holes, and for us, you know, all we wanted was a guy wearing a mic in contention, and he had a putt on 18 to win the tournament wearing a mic, and it was the amount of access is incredible with a microphone versus what you can just get from a Parab microphone in the fairway. And I learned a lot from it, and conversely, we've had a lot of conference calls with the tour and with Golf Channel and NBC in terms of, you know, what were the benefits of having a leader versus, you know, covering somebody on a Friday with it.
I actually watched that coverage, Brant, that evening, and it was, I'll just say, it was really cool to hear kind of what Troy was saying kind of going on through that round.
Yeah.
And obviously he didn't end up winning or really making anything coming down the stretch there, but it was kind of a cool aspect to really hear, you know, that happen.
Yeah, and I learned a lot. I was wrong. I wasn't sure. I mean, I knew the biggest difference would be on the greens, where we just can't get microphones that close. So I know Fox put microphones in the cups, and it was for getting the sound of the players. And then the problem was every time a ball would go in, you'd hear the rattle, and they were like, oh, man, you know, what are we going to do? So, but it was amazing how much more they spoke walking towards the tee. So early on, we picked them up with their second shot at 6, a par 5, and 7 is a par 3. And we went and showed other shots, and then I could hear him talking as he got to 7 and the wind was swirling, and it was fascinating stuff. So I had to adjust how I produced and saying, okay, I need to get there before he pulls the club, even before he starts talking with the caddy. I mean, so that's where we really made adjustments, and then walking off tees and after they hit shots. Normally with a Parab, it's got to move around to whomever is hitting. So it was really cool, you know, he would hit, and we would stay with him for about 30 seconds, and then we just started going to commercial with everybody laying out and hearing him talk. So I learned a lot, and to me it was fascinating. And if you could get, you know, a Justin Thomas or a Jordan Spieth, Mike, you know, guys who really speak, you'd fill in bones, you know, when they were in their heyday, I think it would be a game changer for golf.
Talk a little bit about Sophia Schubert, you know, getting her on with the U.S. Women's AM and kind of how that came about, and talk about kind of her performance as a rookie kind of doing that, and how you feel she did in that role.
Well, it's funny. I call her Knoxville's own, like UT Junior is what I kept calling her. I said, you know, finally somebody from the real UT can show you something here. You know, we had covered her in college because we do all the NCAA championships and some regular season events. And then when It was about 5 weeks ago on a Sunday night when this USGA deal happened, where they left Fox and came back to us. And we had to scramble to get everything ready and ready to go. And one of our initiatives was, you know, how can we get some new announcers who are familiar with the USGA package, with the women's AM, the men's AM, junior boys, Walker Cups, Curtis Cups, that sort of thing. So I reached out to about, I would say, close to 40 golf coaches who I know and trust, both from the men's and women's side, and say, hey, let's kind of give me a list. And I've always kind of made a list. And on the female, on the women's side, Sophia's name came up a lot, not only from Texas and Ryan Murphy, their head coach, but from other coaches. And when you get it from a rival's coach, that's when you know, okay, you got to look into this. So I reached out to our executive producer, Molly Solomon, and she goes, let's try it. And so I called her and, you know, said, hey, would you have any interest in doing this? And I knew she was playing Symetra Tour, and it was right in between when the Symetra Tour would be playing. And she said, absolutely. So we spent 2 weekends FaceTiming each other and on the phone watching CBS's show and pretending that she would be an on-course walker. So I kind of gave her the gist from a producer standpoint. Here's what I'm going to do. And so on the second weekend, I think we might have watched 3M or maybe Detroit, and I pretended I was producing the show and when she would come in and talk. So she was throwing a lot of curveballs. I mean, you know, we had a hurricane that came in on Monday. Her flight was canceled Tuesday. With the COVID restrictions, it's been incredibly difficult and challenging on site. But I thought she did great. I was really proud of her. She offered a lot of insight. You know, I mean, she won that championship 3 years ago. There aren't a lot of players that can say, you know, tell us what it's like to win the event and know the players that are in the field. So again, I'm rooting like hell for her on the Symetra Tour, but I also told her I'm not rooting for you because if it doesn't work out, I'm hoping. And she finished, I think, T12. I followed her the first event and we talked every night. So I think she has a lot of potential, a lot of ability. And the great thing was she was all in. She was asking a lot of good questions. She was really relying on our announcers from Kay Cockrell to Karen Stupples and Kurt Byram. You know, how do you do things? But I thought she offered a lot, and I was really, really proud of her. But again, if she's ever on the show, tell her that UT Junior, you know, that's what you call her, and she'll know where it comes from.
Well, what do you call Jim Gallagher, who is from UT?
I have to say it many times. He's getting so old, he can't hear me anymore. So that's the problem with Jimmy. Every time I talk to him and produce him. So I had Jim at, where's the last? We worked together at the Bob Hope, well, the old Bob Hope. So I don't get to see Jimmy enough. I wish I did. But you know, we talk Tennessee Vol golf every time we're together. He's the best.
Hey, Brent, thank you so much for joining us. I hope we'll get a chance to hook up with you again, to visit with you. Fascinating stuff. You do a terrific job with the Golf Channel, and look forward to having you on again soon.
Thank you, guys. Anytime. I'd love to be on. So thank you, guys. You do a great job.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Brent. That's Brent Packer with the Golf Channel, and his interview brought to you by Willow Creek, one of the top public courses in East Tennessee. To make a tee time, give him a call, 675-0100. Need to get a golf tip? And it is brought to you by Fairways and Greens. Practice made perfect. Call 777-4653. Braxton, tell me about hitting a hybrid out of the rough. When's the best time to try that? And what's the best way to try to deal with hitting it in? Of course, when you got 5 inches, I don't know that it helps of rough. But tell me about hitting a hybrid out of the rough.
It's all dependent on the lie. So it's a lot of it kind of similar to what we talked about around the greens chipping or even with some of the punch shots, like being able to read your lie is really critical. And say there's three kinds of lies. There's one where it's kind of sitting up on top of the grass, and you could literally hit 3-wood or driver out of that lie. So you've got to kind of adjust where your bottom is. You have the middle lie where it's kind of sitting half and half, good, bad, and then you have the one where it's just sitting totally down. And if you have a high or lofted hybrid, if you can get the club head down far enough into the grass, it can still pop it out. So I wouldn't totally go against saying to hit a hybrid out of the rough if you have a bad lie, but it's all about kind of being able to read the lie and knowing where the depth of the club needs to hit the ground. So if it's in the middle, it's going to kind of be mid. If it's on the top, it needs to be on top. And if it's below, you got to kind of go and gouge it out. And if it's like 5 inch rough, I mean, you need to just hit a wedge and wedge it down the fairway.
Right. What are the best hybrids on the market?
Right now, Titleist makes a really good hybrid. They've got the TS2 hybrid, and it's, to me, a lot of times when you look at a hybrid for a better player in particular, it's really easy to hook a hybrid just because of how the dynamics of it are made. And Titleist has done a huge amount of research and work to try to make a hybrid that doesn't quite hook it as much. So look at your local golf shop at Fairways and Greens or at Edwin Watts and kind of go in there and test out the new TS2 hybrid. It's a really good, really good one from Titleist.
And that's our equipment tip. It's brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, proud home of the 90-day 100% satisfaction guarantee. Do want to mention that our golfer of the week is Bo Andrews for tying for third in the Tennessee State Amateur. That's brought to you by Master Battery, the battery experts of Knoxville, located on Callahan Drive, or you can go online at masterbattery.com. Now time for a couple of topics. That's brought to you by i3 Verticals, payment processes for businesses, technology-driven, human-powered. The PGA had two reachable par fours. Colin Morikawa hit the shot of the tournament, pretty much. There was a hole in one, but still, when he hit that shot on 16 to make eagle, do you like the idea of majors having these reachable par fours?
I love the short par four. I think it's a really cool and fun thing to watch. Just takes the strategy kind of and heightens it, to be honest. You know, Colin Morikawa said that shot fit his eye perfect, so he was taking driver no matter what. But if you had somebody in that same circumstance that typically draws the ball, that would probably not be the best strategy for them. They might iron it down there and wedge it on the green. But I really love the short par fours. And then, I mean, with that one, there's some trouble around it, so it's not exactly the easiest of holes around the green. So I really love those.
The longest active streak of making the cut in majors belongs to Brooks Koepka at 23. Ricky Fowler had his at 14 snap. Why? Because he whiffed a putt. How about that? Got just a little bit of time left. Justin Thomas lost a ball in the tree. Phil Mickelson lost one in the tree. It seems like some of those trees out in California gobble up golf balls, Braxton.
Yeah, those cypress trees are pretty thick. And it's funny, my wife and I were actually talking about it. It's just such a cool look. One of my favorite golf courses in the world is Riviera, and it's just got those massive trees, and it almost kind of looks like a Harry Potter kind of thing. Like, it's just a cool thing that we don't get to see around here, and I don't think that JT and Phil think it's too cool when their ball sticks up in the tree, but it's just an added element to that kind of golf out there.
Yeah. Hey, Braxton, thank you for joining us tonight. Good luck tomorrow in your tournament.
Thank you, Jimmy. I appreciate it.
All right. That's Braxton Hunter, our co-host. Also want to thank you for listening. Want to thank our guests for joining us as well. And we'll look forward to seeing you again next Monday night. This has been Golf Talk.